Guys, welcome back to another episode of Worst Verse. Hang 10. You live in Larchmont, you're like, hang 10. Hang loose. You don't live in Malibu, you can't do that. I'm dead. I know. My guest this week is Maz Jobrani. Am I saying it right?
You nailed it, I love that you nailed that.
I've heard your name for years.
Brittany, he's awesome.
He's a daddy, he's a podcast host, you most likely know him for his comedy. He's an actor, he's a baker.
I'm a spokesperson for bald people all over the world, ladies. The one thing I don't do is bake, Brittany.
You don't bake? Okay, so I lied. You're not a baker.
Bro, I would love to. You know what the problem is? I would love to do all that cooking stuff. Yeah. Do you cook?
You know what? I did until I married my husband, because my husband's an amazing chef.
Oh, really?
And I came into the relationship like, oh, I can make this, I can make that. I'm Italian. Yeah. So I'm like, oh, yeah, let me get some chicken parm, all this.
Oh, yeah.
And then my husband just was letting me do this, kind of, you know, placating me. Uh-huh. And then one day he's like, let me cook for you. And he cooks this insane, like, five-star dish. And wow. I'm like, all right, well, I'm never cooking again.
See, that's the thing. Like, I need to have the patience for it. I honestly, like, I think as a stand-up comedian, one thing we do is you reflect on your past. And I'm sure you've done it
all
the time. Someone who's, you know, in entertainment, you do it as well.
Yeah.
And I've reflected on it and I realized I think I have like a low attention span for example, we're talking about kids, right? So I have kids and there's been times where they say, we're having a parent conference. So you sit there and someone's giving a presentation and I'm just wandering off because I can't. And I realized stand-up comedy is a perfect thing for me because I have to pay attention for 15 minutes or an hour to myself and to you. And then I'm done. And so with that in mind, I don't know if I have the patience to cook the way your husband does the cooking. Like I do, there's a few things. I don't know. I keep saying it. I have this glamorous idea in my head that I'm going to go to Italy one summer and spend the whole summer in a cooking class.
Yeah.
And then come back and be like, hey, pasta parmigiana, you know, whatever.
But that was good.
I don't know. It's not going to happen.
So you have a podcast right now called Back to School, which you do. And I love that idea. And I was asking you why back to school? And you said, because you have kids.
Yes. So what happened was my kids would ask me questions I didn't know the answers for.
Uh-huh.
And so I thought, rather than Googling it again, let me get experts in here and we can learn from them. So every episode starts with my kids asking a question. And then we go into it with the experts, and it's called Back to School with Maz Jobrani. And what's amazing, it's just become like what I'm sure your podcast has become an opportunity to just talk to different people.
Of course.
So for me too, I'll be like reading an article and it'll say something like, you know, Professor John Schlemanski, who's an expert on, you know, extreme right fundamentalist, whatever. I'm like, oh, this sounds like an interesting dude. Let me track them down and I'll bring them on. So I've had on, like, there was a lady named Jill Heinerth, who's a cave diver. She goes underneath glaciers.
Whoa.
Yeah, like to find other organisms. I just had this
Where
dude.
Does she do that? Like in cold places or warm places?
Listen, man.
Anywhere.
This lady, people, if you're watching, Jill Heinerth, look up the book. She wrote this book about how she got into scuba diving and all that stuff. And so what's happened is scientists that are looking for different organisms will reach out to her and they'll say, help us scuba dive to go underneath. They go underneath glaciers. So one of the stories she tells is about how they went underneath this glacier and there's like four or five of them. When you dive like that, you got to have ropes.
That's
so
deep.
Girl.
Like, how deep are we talking?
Like, I don't know the depth, but it's just, you feel claustrophobic when she's telling you underneath a glacier, it's frozen. So you got gloves on, whatever. You're all in like this, you know, this super hypothermic, whatever outfit. And they're all tied to ropes so they can, you know, help each other if somebody gets lost or stuck. All of a sudden, she says, the glacier starts to crack, and then they feel this rush of water is starting to go against them. And she goes, I'm there, and I'm thinking to myself, if we get in trouble and we get stuck somehow, we have to have some, you know, the best scuba divers come and rescue us. And then I look around, I realize the best scuba divers are with me. She's one of the best, and
oh,
she's
my God.
Dude, I was like, oh my, and like the thing cracks and they get through it and then they go up on the boat and then all of a sudden they get on the boat just in time to see the whole glacier just fall apart.
And they would have been underneath of it.
They would have been underneath it. So there's these types of people like that you go, holy shit. And you go, I want to talk to that person.
Yeah.
And it also inspires you. You know, again, as a comedian, I'm like, oh, man, if I'm having a hard day, I'm like, shit, this girl was underneath the fucking.
This bitch almost killed by a glacier. You know what I mean? Like, exactly. I'm beeping at people on the 101. I think I got problems. You know exactly. what I mean? That's crazy.
Yeah. So it's become a good excuse. I've had her on. I had a guy who helped land the rover on Mars.
Whoa. Does he say aliens are real? Did you ask him that?
I think we might have asked him that, but he's a scientist, so he'll say things like, well, there's life on Mars.
Okay, you know? So that's a yes.
That's a yes.
Don't fucking give me those scientific answers, okay? According to data, there's living things. Okay, yes, so there's aliens.
There's aliens.
Technically.
There's got to be aliens. They just look like E.T. They just look like little germs.
I think there's big ones.
You think there's big ones like E.T.? Oh, shit.
For sure. Oh, shit. Are you kidding me? Didn't you hear about the whole...
But you think they're looking at us and going like, these motherfuckers are just a mess. We don't want to talk to them at all.
We're the lowest on the totem pole in terms of intelligence.
We are, like, we're the Florida of the universe. No offense, Florida. Offense, Florida.
We are. You know?
And so I think they probably are like, we're just going to avoid... Because we think, as human beings, we think... Oh, if they found us, they'd want to fight us. They want our this, they want our that.
No, they don't want to fight us. They're worried about us wanting to fight them because we're so
stupid.
Scared.
Yeah,
you know?
Space.
So like, oh, get the fuck out of here. I'll fucking capture you and dissect you.
Space Force.
Space Force.
It's so stupid. Because what it is I bet you the reason we'll never find those aliens you're talking about.
Yeah.
Because every time we show up, they're like, oh shit, the humans are here. Hide. Everybody hide.
Exactly.
They all just go hide in the corner. Like, and they're just like, just don't find us because we don't want to deal with your bullshit.
Exactly. And we're so dramatic. Like if they came here, they know that it would be pandemonium because people are so fucking psycho. Like they're peaceful. But of course, us with our Independence Day movie, and all that, we're scared. And
can you imagine the first alien that gets on Twitter and is like, yo, I just want to say I just got here from Mars and hey Earth, peace. And people would be like, peace this motherfucker.
Dead.
People are like, you're a fucking idiot. You know,
people would be, I just don't think we'd be able to handle it. And I think the government would try to capture them and dissect them. And,
yes.
they know that. They're too smart. So they're just watching us from a distance. But like, and I talk about this on like every episode, but like, you know, basically I feel like they're watching us destroy our planet and they're like, please stop doing that. Cause if we fuck up Earth, it ruins the whole,
of
you know,
course,
solar system.
We are the worst because what it is I just thought of this cause you know, we're talking about earlier about reflecting on your past. If you reflect on human beings, we are always trying to control everything.
Everything.
That's our problem.
Yep.
We're trying to control everything. And that's where all the conspiracy theories come from. That's where everything comes. There's an explanation for everything. Oh, no, the pandemic's not real because it's somebody who's doing this. There's a reason. Everything's got a reason. Yeah. What about it's just Mother Nature?
Yeah.
That was Mother Nature saying, hey, motherfucker, stay
Slow
home
down.
For a minute.
Slow down. Let me heal.
So I can clean the earth. Remember how beautiful the skies looked?
About Venice canals? They completely went, the water in Venice was clear. It was the first time in like hundreds of years you could see the water, swans, nature.
That's Mother Nature going, listen, stop trying to control this shit with your bullshit. You know, it's you're so right. And that's why if there's aliens out there, they're watching us and going like, oh, these motherfuckers.
I know. I almost feel like I know there's so many theories, but I almost feel like it was either nature that release this virus itself or, you know, it was created and released by accident, but like, you know, nothing happens by accident. Everything happens for a reason. You know, we needed to give Earth a break.
I think Earth needed a break. Yeah. I really do. And it's been, and we need, you know, it's funny. I've been, you know, as a stand-up comedian, I haven't toured really. I've done a couple of tours, but it's like, we got a pandemic puppy. You know, I was just talking about the dogs.
Oh yeah.
I was not a dog person my whole life.
Why?
Because the culture I grew up in, a lot of immigrant cultures don't like dogs.
Where did you grow up?
So I grew up in Northern California, but my family, I was born in Iran.
Okay, okay.
So Middle Easterners don't like dogs.
Okay.
Even like in Islam, and I'm not religious, but in Islam, they say that like a dog is najis. Najis means like dirty. And like, so if you're in Iran, they're roaming the streets and shit, but now probably more there's pets. But back then,
nobody.
They'd be wild dogs. And like I had a pet rooster.
Uh-huh.
So the rooster, I guess, was okay. But it wasn't like a rooster that I'd play with and
they
be like.
They liked the rooster more than the dog?
Dude, you don't even know. First of all, I was like 4 years old or something. And my dad, because my dad was a successful businessman back in Iran. So we had our like our vacation home by the sea.
Uh-huh.
Then we had our home back in Tehran. Uh-huh. So when we go to the sea, the home by the sea, I had a rooster. And he'd be like, that's your rooster. And it's funny. I've talked about it in my stand-up because I go, I never really saw the rooster. I was just here like, I was like, that's my rooster. And that's all I had.
You never got to play with it?
I never played with a rooster. I'm fucking 4 years old. I'm not going to go play with a rooster.
Wait, so then what made you guys come here to the United States?
So in late 78, there was protests in the streets of Iran. Mm-hmm. And so my father was a successful businessman in New York doing business, tells my mom, hey, why don't you bring me and my older sister, bring them out for a couple weeks during the winter break. The protests will die down. You guys can go back afterwards. And what happened was the protests got more and more. It eventually led to the revolution of 1979, where the whole regime of the Shah toppled and this regime of the mullahs, the religious groups came in. And so I always say it's a very common story. A lot of Iranians came for, we came for 2 weeks and we stayed for 40 whatever years.
Wow.
And that's why I'm a big advocate when it comes to any kind of immigrant stuff, because when Trump got in and did that travel ban, I got so upset about that. And I got even more upset at fellow Iranians or fellow other immigrants who turned around and they were like, well, yeah, this is, it's right. They should, you know, we should close the borders and have people come in through some system that's going to be more extreme vetting. And I go, motherfuckers, it's already extreme vetting.
Yeah.
And because there's a lot of like immigrants who go, well, I came legally. I go, listen, first of all, if you came illegally, fantastic.
Yeah.
You probably had the privilege or some sort of
connection.
Money and connection to do it. And thirdly, a lot of people came illegally, but then gained legal status.
Right.
And even those who go to the border and they claim political asylum, that's a legal thing. That is, they're showing up and going, look, there's a gang in El Salvador who's trying to kill me.
Yeah.
You know, I'm here. And so.
So things were dangerous in Iran when you were
Iran,
there.
Yeah. I mean,
like, listen, what do you remember?
Well, listen, I remember I was at the time when I came, I was six. So first of all, before the revolution in Iran, it was like being in America. I mean, there was such American culture that our biggest export is our culture.
Uh-huh.
So whether it's like Rambo or it's, you know, speaking of Rambo real quickly, just a side note, U.S. and Iran became enemies after the Iranians took the Americans hostage in the hostage crisis of the early 80s.
Okay.
At that point, I'm in America. I'm a kid. Americans being the meatheads that we are. They basically figure, oh, I should pick on this kid who's Iranian, even though my family left the government that took Americans hostage. Mm-hmm. I'm actually on your side, but you're going to pick on me and others.
Yeah.
And I've heard so many, like mine wasn't that bad. They used to call me fucking Iranian, which is fine given like, I know people that got beaten up. I know people that they say they were shot at, all kinds of shit.
Yeah.
But a side note, these two countries became enemies, but just to show you how much American culture gets exported. I met a guy years later who was in Iran in the mid 80s when Iran and America were big, big enemies, but Iran was at war with Iraq, its neighbor.
Uh-huh.
And he goes, I was like 14. This kid goes, I was like 14, 15. He goes, back then, even back then when they would say America's the great Satan, he goes, to inspire us to go fight the Iraqis on the war field. He goes, they would play Rambo. So we would watch John Rambo, like American hero number one. He goes, we'd come out of the theater, we start karate kicking each other. And then our like mullah, whoever the leader was, the platoon leader, would be like, that's what you gotta do to the Iraqis, go get them.
My gosh.
Yeah, so American culture is all over the place.
Yeah.
So as a kid in Iran, I used to like, I had Spider-Man comic books, Zorro. Muhammad Ali was huge because he was a Muslim, so Muslim countries loved him.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I'm not being religious, but he was just big.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what I knew. And then I come to America, and at first, I'm 6 years old. Mm-hmm. My father, because he was successful, he had a suite at the Plaza Hotel in New York, across the street at that time from FAO Schwartz.
Oh, my God. If you got, see, you guys, I don't know if you're going to remember this. The FAO Schwartz in New York was the jam.
Biggest like, toy store in the world.
Oh my.
In the movie Big.
You're so lucky.
In the movie Big. That's
I've
the toy store.
I've gotten to go there like twice, and that was like the best days of my life.
Dude, the best days. And so imagine I'm this kid who shows up like, you know, listen, a lot of stories I hear people go like, I had to escape Iran on a donkey back and over the Afghan mountains.
You're like, I flew first class and had baby caviar.
Bro. I was on Pan Am first class. I was landed
You're
at the Plaza
so
Hotel
lucky.
Across from FAO Shorts. So I was
the plane flew right into FAO Shorts. You're like, God damn, my life is good. I'm dead.
I was like, America. So America. Yeah, I was like, well, this revolution's really working out for me. You know, I was getting toys. I was like hanging out with my sister. We're having like, we would order room service. They'd bring us strawberries with whipped cream. I go, America's the best fucking country in the world.
Right.
So that was out the gate.
Right.
But then, you know, then we moved to Northern California. I grew up in Marin. Again, very privileged, like, upbringing.
Yeah.
But looking back on it as, you know, the psychology that you go through, I realized, first of all, I realized I never felt American enough and I never felt Iranian enough.
So you were like in between. You're like
always
not accepted by being by people in Iran, not accepted by Americans because they see you as Iranian. And you, that's hard.
Yeah, well, it's hard as a kid. You're just trying to blend in, right? So as a kid, first of all, you're getting all the fucking Iranian stuff. But also, yeah. Like culturally speaking, my culture, you're Italian. Italian culture is closer to the Iranian culture than the American culture is very much individualistic, cold. You're 18, get out, you know. Question your parents, question your authorities. Our culture, Italian.
They're
Iranian.
Like, stay as long as you want. Eat some more.
Eat some
like,
more.
You know,
listen to your father. Your father knows best. Listen to your mother. Yeah. All that stuff. So
it's
grew
so
up with
funny
a lot of that.
You say that because my grandmother actually, my grandparents had to come from Italy. And so my grandmother used to avoid the sun because she's like, you're more olive, your yeah. skin tone. I'm usually get pretty tan too, but she used to have to avoid the sun because people would be mean to her when she was tan.
Yeah.
And her name was Philomena.
Yeah.
And she had to change it to yeah. just Phyllis because
yeah.
she couldn't get a job.
Yeah.
She was a nurse and then like she tried to do nursing here and they were like, Philomena, you're what are you, like a foreigner? And then
that goes to everything I say. I've learned to be so I've always wanted to be an advocate for the underdog.
Yeah.
No matter who it is.
Yeah.
Whether it's an ethnic thing, religious thing. A sexual thing. I'm yeah. always, because I go, that's a human being.
Yeah.
And also, your turn, you either had your turn or your turn's coming.
Right.
Don't think that by siding with the side that goes, oh, you know, like a lot of my friends, look, politically speaking, I'm very left-leaning and a lot of my, I have friends that are very right-leaning. So during like Black Lives Matter, a lot of my friends were like, well, black people should care for themselves. I'm like, motherfucker. I go, first of all, do you have any black friends? I go, if you talk to a black friend, because as a comedian, I read a post from another comedian who was saying, because you don't know this stuff until you talk to them.
Right.
The guy goes, yeah, you know, watching all this stuff with the cops and what they're doing to, you know, black people. He goes, one time I was on my way to go meet Keenan Ivory Wayans for this big presentation, get pulled over by a cop. I'm all like dressed, ready to go. And he goes, next thing I know, my head's in the ground. There's oil on my face. The guy's like holding me down. I'm like, holy shit, that's just heartbreaking. So I brought it up to like my rich, you know, conservative Persian friends. I was like, do you have any black friends? The guy, one of them goes, you know, there is a black guy I play tennis with. And he says, whenever he comes to Brentwood, he gets pulled over. I'm like, yeah.
That's the thing is like, I didn't even realize it either. Is like my one of my girlfriends said to me, she's like, when you get pulled over, do you fear for your life? And I said, no, why would I fear for my life? Exactly. And she goes, when I get pulled over, I fear for my life.
Yeah.
Like I say the wrong thing. I do the wrong thing and I could get shot.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that to me was like, I didn't even think about that. Cause to us, we're like, oh, I get pulled up. But that doesn't happen to other ethnicities.
I don't think like it all depends, right?
Yeah, so, cause like, I've heard like people being racist across the board.
Well, look, if you're like, it depends on obviously color of your skin and how you look, right? So, I mean, I personally have had less racist experiences towards myself.
Uh-huh.
But my mom, who has an accent, you know, she was, you know, later in her life when she came to America, like right after September 11th.
Yeah.
That's when she said one time she was at Costco.
Uh-huh.
And there was a cart that was left there and somebody was obviously getting something and my mom was trying to get to a product that was behind the cart. So she moves the cart to get her product, puts it in her cart. This lady comes back and goes, who moved my cart? And my mom with her accent, I did, it was in my way, I had to move it. And the first thing the lady says to her, she goes, why don't you go back to your country right away? And then my mom goes, this is my country. And then the lady took her own cart, starts walking away and turns to my mom and goes, bitch. And my mom in her best, my mom doesn't like to cuss. So she was like, she who says it is it. Like, all right. Yeah, that's not bad, mom. That's a good comeback.
That's a great comeback.
That's like straight out of fifth grade.
Wow.
Right?
Yeah, I'm not rubber. You're glue. Yeah. Everything that sticks to me will bounce off of me and stick to you. Yeah. Wow, I like that. She who says it is it. Yeah. Wow. Yeah.
So she.
That's such a good one, Karen. Go back to your own country. Like, that's like the most overused. Like.
So I'm telling you, man, listen, I, and again, as a kid, I got the fucking Iranian a couple times. But
people were mostly accepting.
I mean, I just had friends. I had things going for me. I was good at sports.
Mm-hmm.
I think I had a pretty good sense of humor.
Okay.
And I was very immersed in the American culture. So you talk about Bugs Bunny or Leave It to Beaver or Eddie Murphy at that time. I'm with you. And also, I again, this is all reflecting on my past. But I remember I had a big sweet tooth, so I'd go grocery shopping with my mom, and she'd have one cart of groceries, and I'd have one cart of like Twinkies and Ho-Hos and Starbursts and bubble. It was filled. So when I go to school, I have one bag with my food and stuff, one bag with snacks. Hey, what's up, dude?
So everyone was like, you're the fucking man.
I'm bribing my way into friendships, man. I mean, you know, that talk about being Italian.
Whatever you have to do, yeah. Right?
Here's a little Starburst.
Yeah, yeah. You want a cannoli? Here, try this. Change your life. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Wow, you stayed skinny for eating all that junk food.
Well, being athletic, I think even to this day, nowadays, under the pandemic, I find myself jogging just so that I can like drink wine later.
Stop.
That's my goal.
I want to talk about right now, Pandemic Warrior, your specials on Peacock TV right now, guys, if you want to check out Maz's special. So I want to talk about, you call it Pandemic Warrior. Why? Because this has been a war for you.
Well, yeah, in a way. So what happened with Pandemic Warrior? So the comedy special was originally filmed December of 2019 in Dubai.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so I was on tour in the Middle East. And as a comedian, when you have your material, it's ready to go, you want to film it. So I've had like five or six specials. The previous one was on Netflix. It was called Immigrant.
Okay.
That one was done right when Donald Trump became president at the Kennedy Center in D.C.
Perfect timing.
In his backyard. I was like cussing him out on my special.
Oh, no.
So I got a lot of people that were like, we love you. And a lot of people were like, go back to your country. I got that a lot.
Yeah.
Matter of fact, I have this dude's picture. I got to tell you later. But this guy, some dude texted me. Like, he found my number somehow. And he's like, if you don't like this country, why don't you? And he said my wife's name and my kid. Why don't you guys go back to Iran? I was like, what the fuck? And I looked the number up, and it was like some like total white trash dude out of Missouri who has like a record and shit. And I was like, all right, I'm holding on to this shit.
Scary.
Yeah, I was like,
how did he get your number?
I have no idea. But I was like, I got his information. So if anything escalated.
You're like, I've sent this to everyone in my family.
Yeah, I'm going to fuck you up, motherfucker. So
scary.
But anyway, that was the previous special. This special was ready to go. I'm in Dubai. I go, let's film it. December 2019. At the time, the tour was called the Peaceful Warrior Tour.
Okay.
Now, the reason it was called the Peaceful Warrior Tour was because under the Trump administration, when you would do Trump jokes, people would lose their minds. Like, Trump fans would lose their minds. Yeah. And it was weird to me because I had to remind them, we live in America, because they'd be like, you can't make fun of Trump. You can't make fun of the president. I go, the whole point of America is we can make fun of our leaders, whether it's Trump or Obama or Biden. I don't care who it is.
Right.
So what happened was early on, I would do some Trump jokes and some guy would like heckle back, and then I'd get in an argument with him. And then the rest of the audience was like, what's going on, dude? And I was like, oh, I'm sorry. I lost my mind. So then I decided what I'm going to do is next time a Trump fan gets upset at me, I'm going to Tai Chi that shit. I'm going to be a peaceful warrior.
Good.
I'll still say my shit,
yeah.
But I'm going to take their heckle and just be like, ha, and just Tai Chi it.
You just didn't hit you.
This, I got it. On my YouTube, if people go in and put Maz Jobrani Trump heckler, that's it. There's a lady. It's at Flappers.
A lady
at Flappers in Burbank. I'm doing my Trump jokes. By the way, this is like the Trump stuff comes at like the last 10 minutes of my act. Mm-hmm. She's having a great time. Everything's great. When I do self-deprecating, that's fine. Making fun of my kids, that's fine. Do some jokes about the Democrats, that's fine. As soon as I get to the Trump, I'm doing my Trump. And then I hear in the audience, I, as a woman, I'm offended. I go, what? I'm offended. And then she starts going, I'm a citizen. I go, that's great. I'm a citizen too. And I just Tai Chi that shit. She just keeps yelling. And I go, isn't this a great country that you can have an opinion? I love that.
Yeah.
And I go, listen, you don't have to stay here. You can go if you want.
Everyone is there.
And I go, listen, I go, I only got two more Trump jokes. If you want to stay. So anyway, I Tai Chi'd the hell out of that. And I felt good about it. By the way, another side note, because the show ended with like, it ended successfully. I was proud of myself that I didn't yell back.
Yeah.
I go to the green room and my opening act comes in. He's like, dude, your fans are going off on that lady. So I was peaceful. My fans were like, you bitch, you interrupted the show. Anyway, so.
I feel like people give comedians too much shit because it's like, what is your title? You're a fucking comedian. You make jokes. You joke about everything. Like you said, like you joke about yourself. You make fun of yourself. You make fun of your kids. You make fun of, you know, whatever. It's a fair game. Everybody gets made fun of when you're a comedian.
Absolutely.
Everybody. And it's a fucking joke. It's a joke. Like, that's what people don't get. And they take everything so personally.
Take it personally, but also more importantly.
And they're like, cancel him. Cancel her. Well, it's like,
it's my point of view. If you don't like it, don't buy the ticket.
Yeah.
You know? So if you don't like my point of view, go do your own show or go do your own blog or do whatever you want to do. And the thing with Trump that was interesting was it really became like before Trump became president and started saying the racist shit. You would do jokes about him being the, you know, the host of The Apprentice, and people would be like, ha, ha, ha. Once he became president and started saying some racist shit, his fans went nuts. And it was to the point where I was like, dude, I'm not making fun of your grandmother. My own mom actually liked Trump. So like now when I get into Trump jokes, I go, listen, just calm the fuck down. I'm about to deal with my own mother about this. So just, so it's like, so that's, so anyway, so it was called Peaceful Warrior because I was going around the world peacefully.
Good.
And then once I filmed it and then I came to the States to sell it and get it on, you know, on air, pandemic hit.
Yeah.
And then what happened was when the pandemic hit, some comedy specials that had been filmed before the pandemic started coming out on Netflix and I tried watching them. And it felt like they'd been filmed on Mars.
It was tone deaf because there was nothing relatable, right?
Nothing relatable. Because
now we're stuck in pandemic, COVID's going on, and the jokes weren't had nothing to do with it.
Yeah, it was like traffic jokes, and the people are sitting next to each other, and they're laughing and all that. So I said, you know what? If I'm going to put this out, I got to do a few minutes at the top just explaining I know what's going on.
Right.
So what I did was I took like, there's like a, basically in the beginning of the pandemic, I was doing stand-up like Zoom shows or Instagram Live. From like,
just gotta get that fixed.
Yeah.
What is it, a Zoom stand-up show? I'll be there.
I'm telling you. So I was doing it like in like basically a closet of sorts in our house. And so when you start the special, it's me in the closet going, hey, this is what's been going on.
Yeah.
You know, I do 3 or 4 minutes of that and I go, now let's go watch the thing I shot in Dubai. So at least I've put it in perspective.
Yeah.
And then at the end I come back and do a few more minutes of closet comedy.
Right.
And so that's why the title says Peaceful Warrior and then it crosses out peaceful and puts pandemic.
That's great. Yeah. I love that.
Yeah.
And so have you enjoyed this pandemic being at home with your family more or have you been kind of like itching to be?
It's a little bit of all. I think that, but what it is we have so much time in a day now. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, it's a long day.
So you go through like 20 moods in a day. You know, it's crazy.
I do that on regular days.
On regular days.
It's part of having a personality disorder.
Yeah. I'm telling you, like, I'll wake up, I'll be like, that was a great day. And then like 5 minutes later, I'm like, I hate my dog. And then then 10 minutes later, I'll be like, I love my dog. And then, you know, so it goes through one silver lining has been to be home with the kids.
Yeah.
Like even like recently, because things are starting to open up, there's a lot of outdoor comedy shows.
Yeah.
So as a comedian, instinctively, we try to get on stage 5 to 10 times a week.
Of course.
So now that they're available, people text me, hey, can you do this Friday? Sure. Can you do Saturday? Sure. So I'll say, sure, sure, sure. And then it was time to go. And
you're
I
don't want to.
Yeah, I told my wife, I go, God, I'd rather just sit here and open up that wine and watch. What are we watching now? The Woody Allen documentary. Let's watch that. I don't want to go do.
Isn't it crazy? People have gotten very used to being at home.
I start to feel that. But at the same time, listen, we are. Animals of nature. I mean, animals of habit. Yeah. So I think, like, once I went and did the shows, I felt like
you're back in your groove.
Like, oh, that's good.
Yeah.
So I'm looking forward to being back on the road and doing stuff. But I'm also, you know, I'm also happy I got a year to spend with them. Yeah.
And now you get to see, like, you know, does your wife work or no?
My wife. So it's interesting. So she was a lawyer by trade.
Wow.
Yeah. And then once we had the kids and I was touring, she wasn't working. She was just really with the kids. Mm-hmm. And then under the pandemic, it just so happened that a friend of hers was like, hey, you know, I need someone to help with some legal stuff. And so she started doing that. So she's been working more than I have.
Wow.
But I find ways to, like, you know, like you said, I do my Zoom shows. Yeah. I do my podcast. I do, now there's Clubhouse. I'm on Clubhouse. Are you on Clubhouse?
I've heard about Clubhouse. I have really bad ADD and I can't just sit there and listen to someone talk.
Yeah.
you know, like the people that are listening to this right now, like, God bless you. I mean, I can't do it.
Well, I listen when there's, first of all, there's two ways I listen to my podcast. When I go running.
Yes.
I just listen to them and it's great. And it's like, just gets my mind. Cause it's also like you're listening, you're not listening. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Or driving a long distance.
Or driving a long distance. Yeah. And then Clubhouse is interesting because if you get the right subject, it's like you can listen to the conversation and learn something. Cause a lot of times experts are on talking about whatever. Or if you're participating. So as a comedian, like just last night, I ended up in, you know, saw some names I recognized. Oh, they're roasting people.
Uh-huh.
So then it was actually kind of fun because now it's actually a good comedy exercise because what happens is the fans will come into the roast room and they'll raise their hands to be roasted. So they'll bring them on one at a time. And it all starts from like your picture.
Yeah.
So you hit the picture and you're like, oh, you know, what's up with whatever it is? And you're going off on the person.
Dead.
And I'm not, I don't like being mean with my comedy. Yeah. So I'm trying to like look for like a nice roast, but roast.
You're like, nice green shirt, green guy.
Green guy.
They're like, wow, Maz sucks at roasting people. wait, so, but here's my question. How do they keep, so I know how it is, like you each meeting has speakers. And then how do you keep from all talking over each other?
It's pretty good. So what'll happen is like, let's say you and I were to go moderate a talk. So as a matter of fact, what I started doing was I started, since my guests that I've had on my show, on my podcast, I feel have been so interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt like, you know what? Some people might be listening on my podcast, but there's probably a lot of people that aren't.
Right.
So I asked a couple of guests to come on Clubhouse with mm-hmm. me. And I said, can you come do a session with me? And it was actually very interesting because now I'm interviewing them live. Mm-hmm. And I say, if you want to hear more, go to the podcast.
Mm-hmm.
But also what happens is there's people in the audience that can take questions. So like, for example, let's say you and I were to moderate a room. So we'd start a room and we'd come up with a title, whatever that is. It could be a topic or it could be like, you know, our podcast. You know what I'm saying? Brittany and Maz talk about their podcast.
Right.
And then we just go on and automatically the people that are following us, they get an alert that we're on.
Uh-huh.
So obviously we have friends of ours who are in the industry or what have you. So they might pop up and you might be like, oh, hey,
come join.
Now we have like 10 people talking
speakers.
And you see the people speaking. And then every once in a while, you and I will come on and go, all right, guys, just to remind you what's going on. Brittany and Maz talking podcast. We're talking a lot of podcasts today. And you look down and there's like 1,000, 2,000, sometimes up to 5,000 listeners.
So this is a popular app.
It's hugely popular.
I keep hearing about it, but I just don't know why. I'm just like so hesitant to even care about it.
Get on.
Okay.
And just like find, because what it does is like all these apps now, what are your interests? Blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
So then it'll tell you when these people are talking.
Yeah.
And then like I said, once in a while they had like Elon Musk was on and they had like four backup rooms at 5,000 people each waiting to get on. There's a couple of girls, Leah Lamar and Nicole Behnam. They host a comedy show. That was weird for me because I go, comedy, you should see me.
Yeah.
But it ended up being so much fun.
Really?
Because it's like being on a phone conversation. When it's your turn to talk, you and I are having a phone conversation and 1,000 people are listening to it.
Ooh.
And we just rant. It's so fun. And by the way, we don't have to let any of those people up.
Right.
And then mostly the people that, because they're really sensitive to like any trolls or anything.
Yeah.
It's still small enough that they control it.
Yeah.
If you troll, it's like you're gone.
They control it. They fucking troll. I love it. Okay, well, that's cool. I'll have to check it out. This was just a great ad for Clubhouse. Jesus. What are you, one of the owners? I find out later Maz is like the fucking...
No, you know who I ran into? Whitney Cummings.
Yeah.
Who's a friend of mine. I was like, yeah, I've been on Clubhouse. I go, I saw you on this. She goes, I'm an investor. I'm like, motherfucker. I'm
of
like,
of course she is.
Why don't they hit me up for...
Right?
You know, I get free salad dressing on Instagram. You and I were talking about that.
He said that downstairs. Free salad dressing. Dude. Hey.
It's been a whole year. You don't even know. First of all, I joke about this on stage now. Since we've all gone through the pandemic, I joke, but I'm honest. I go, listen, I go, my agents and manager were like, this is the year to grow your social media. You got to post more videos. I go, every time I post a video, I lose followers.
Do you?
I don't know what, I think because Instagram like is cleaning.
What are you posting videos of?
I just funny shit, you know? And so I think what it is I gain a few, but then you lose
1,000.
Because they clean it. They're cleaning like the ones that might have been,
They do delete followers all the time. So like dead accounts, they delete them.
They must be dead accounts. Because I think what happened was there was this lady who was a fan who was like had like a million followers, but she wasn't verified. And I was like, I don't know if she's legit or not. And she had like, she was like one of these people who is like fortune teller, you know, medium kind of.
Right.
And so at one point she was a fan. And then she was like, I posted something. She's like, oh my God, you're so great. I think you're going to be getting like a lot of fans really soon. Next thing I know, my numbers jump like by 50,000. And I was like, did she just pay her farm to give me likes? Yeah,
you can do that.
So I think that's what happens. So I think what happens is every time I gain a few hundred, I lose a few hundred. I've basically been like, it's a weird number. I've been at 289,000 for like a year.
Wow.
And it'll go like 289, 200, 289, 600, 289, 300, 289. It just keeps going like this. Even when I'll have like, I'll post something and it goes 100,000 views of a clip.
Yeah.
And I still, so whatever, long story short, people, you know, I was talking to somebody about like, well, you know, now that I'm sitting at home, maybe I can, you know, find a brand that I can be an ambassador for. I get everybody's like, hey man, I got this new salad dressing. I swear to God.
All salad dressing your DMs. Dressing. Like, do you look like you eat a lot of salad?
No, I don't know. But it was funny too. Here's what's funny is because I'll always be like, hey, what's your advertising budget? They'll be like, three bottles of salad dressing.
Stop. Oh my God. I just had a company contact me about they have this, I don't even want to shout them out. It's a water company. I'm not even going to say the name. They just wrote to me and they go, hey, we love your content. We were wondering if we could get 10 video posts on your page for $300. I was like, are you high for water? And why is your water any different than any other water that's out there? And I'm like, this is crazy.
That's crazy.
That's crazy.
That's like, you know, that's like a tone deaf kind of a thing.
10 videos on your page for $300. I'm like,
dude,
guys, go fuck yourselves on it politely. Politely. I mean, it's kind of crazy. I mean, I don't know, whatever. We're going to take a quick break, guys, and we'll be right back with Maz Jobrani on Worst First. Okay, we're back.
All right.
I love talking to you. I want to talk to you about some of your worsts.
Yes.
So you have some. I know you do.
Yeah, of course.
You have a lot.
Yeah.
Like hundreds.
Well, my worst first was I was going to talk to you about the first time I played a terrorist.
Oh no! Yes. In a movie. So sad.
I know.
So typecast.
I know.
That's so hurtful.
It was really bad.
They didn't even see you. They just cast you on your last name.
Yeah. Well, my name Jobrani sounds Italian.
It does. I was gonna ask you at first because you do look Italian.
I could be, and I lived a year in Italy. I speak Italian.
You could play.
Yeah, I totally could play. But but no, what happened was, so here's the story of it. So what happened was, first of all, as a kid,
what movie was it?
It was a Chuck Norris movie.
Oh.
It was called The President's Man, A Line in the Sand. It was a movie of the week on CBS.
You go to your dad, you're like, Dad, I got my first movie role. He's like, oh, it's very good. What do you play? You're like, I play a terrorist. Yeah. He's like, oh, great.
Yeah, you should have been a doctor.
Good job, son. Yeah, exactly.
Well, my parents didn't want me to do this. A lot of immigrant parents.
Of course
parents,
not.
Yeah, they want lawyer, doctor, engineer, that's right. It. And I actually went a whole path.
Oh, I thought you meant the terrorist role. Sorry.
No. They didn't want me to do this. Like, I should, this is like, even now. No, they had me going down a whole other path. I went to college. I went to grad school.
What did you go to college and grad school for?
I studied political science in undergrad.
Whoa.
Thinking that I was going to go be a lawyer because my parents had convinced me I should be. I'd done plays since I was 12 years old.
Wow.
In school. So I loved it. The first time I went on stage, I did a musical in seventh grade. And I was like, I love this. And the teacher was like, you're good. You got what it takes.
What musical?
It was called The Boyfriend.
Yes.
And I was, so it was seventh and eighth grade. It's like a 1940s kind of musical or something. So the song, some of the songs are still in my head. Won't you Charleston with me? Da 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 da. You know the Charleston dance?
Yeah.
Won't you Charleston with me? And while the band is playing that, Ovodio Do. So anyway, that's seventh grade. I auditioned for it. I love Eddie Murphy at the time. I want to be like Eddie Murphy. A lot of the girls are doing seventh grade, you know, doing the play. I'm like, I'm going to go over there. Our school was seventh and eighth grade. So as a seventh grader, we get cast in the, you know, as background dancers. And there was a lady, her name was Shirley Bonbright. She was the director.
Wow.
Shirley Bonbright tells us, when you do a musical, you always got to be smiling when you're up on stage singing and dancing. You got to be smiling. So I, being a good immigrant child, listened to the adult. All the other American kids being rebellious probably don't listen to her. They're like, whatever, Miss Bonbright.
Yeah.
I'm up there singing, dancing, smiling. One day I come in, I'm under the weather. I go, Miss Bonbright, I'm sick, but I'm here. No problem. I start doing a singing dance, and she goes, everybody stop, stop. Look at him. Look at him. He's sick. He's here. He's smiling. You got to learn from him. And I was like, oh, shit, I'm good. I'm
and
good
that's how
this.
You knew you were going to be a star.
I knew I was going to be a star.
They got Moxie, kid. I love that.
So I started doing plays, and then I went into my high school. And eighth grade, I played the role Little Abner in Little Abner. I don't know if you know. Do you know what Little Abner is?
Of course.
So
I'm
a
theater kid, too. Yeah.
Yeah, so I'm like, you know, I'm this immigrant kid from Iran playing a country bumpkin. You know, Abner, time to go fishing, you know. So I'm like, oh, this is cool. I go to my high school. We have great, like, plays. It's very avant-garde. And I play Batman one time.
We do
Batman the musical.
Whoa.
It was written and directed by the students and choreographed. Everything was done by the students. And yeah. I played Batman. This is the same high school Robin Williams went. It was called Redwood
God,
High School.
Stop.
Yeah, girl.
Where was it?
It's in Marin, Northern
Marin.
California.
Okay.
So I played Batman.
So you go into the audition for the terrorist. You're like, I've played Batman. I've played Little Abner. I can sing and dance. They're like, great, you're going to be the terrorist.
Yeah. Can you say Allahu Akbar? All right. Okay.
But guys, I've played Batman.
How about, can I be Batman and say Allahu Akbar? The first Muslim Batman. Allahu Akbar. Oh, my
oh,
God.
No.
That's
so
funny. Okay. I should do that as a sketch.
You should.
Muslim
you're like,
Batman?
I've done. So funny.
That's funny because he's like, I'm going to kill you, but first I must pray five times. He prays five times a day. I'm going to kill you, but first I must pray.
Oh, my gosh. Okay, so how did you get the part? Was
so
it
what
your
happened
first
was,
part?
Yeah, so what happened was I wanted to get into acting thinking exactly that. I was like, because people say, why do you want to be an actor? My parents even, why? I go, I could be anything. Yeah. I could be, it's amazing.
Yeah.
And so back and forth, struggled to even get into it because my parents were like, no. I go to grad school to maybe become a professor in political science,
wow.
Drop out of grad school, start doing plays again. Love it. Mid-20s, start going for it. And then this kombucha is working. It's magic.
Good. I love it.
Tastes good. So then I start to pursue professionally acting in my mid-20s, 26 years old, start doing stand-up. And the first part I got was a guest star on a TV show called Chicago Hope.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, that's a huge show.
It was a huge show, and yeah. I played a security guard.
Perfect.
I go, this is great, no problem.
Yeah.
The next audition I got was for Walker, Texas Ranger. It was a TV show with Chuck Norris.
Yeah, of course.
Playing a terrorist. And at the time, I didn't really know. I was like, oh, okay, well, I played a security guard. Let me go audition. I auditioned for both, and I got that one. But because I was doing the security guard for Chicago Hope, the timing didn't work out for me to do the terrorist thing. I was like, okay, great. I dodged a bullet.
Right.
Then what happened was I'm at the day job in the ad agency. I was in an ad agency as an assistant to the creative director.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, back then it was like, I don't know, like I was making like $25,000 for the year. That's it.
Wow.
So I'm thinking to myself, God, I need to quit this day job so that I can pursue acting full time.
And make $5,000 a year.
Make $5,000. Exactly. You
that's
know.
That's thinking. I'm glad I used my political science degree.
Exactly. So I'm sitting there and I'm like, I need one big gig to get the hell out of here. And so there was this, I was up for a part in another movie that was going to be, it was Anthony Hopkins and Chris Rock.
Whoa.
Yeah, and they were like fighting terrorists and it was going to be shot in like, I don't know, somewhere like in Hungary or something.
Mm-hmm.
And they told me, they go, this is one of those, like it's called Schedule F or something. So like if you get it, like because of SAG minimum, they got to pay you like, I don't know, $40,000, $50,000 or something.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, oh my God, if I get this, I can just tell my boss, adios.
Yeah.
That takes care of the whole year.
Right.
Well, I got really close on that where to the point where my agent called. He's like, listen, it's down to you and another guy. They just want you to make sure your passport's ready. I was like, I'm ready to go.
Yeah.
And he called me. You didn't get it.
Ah.
The couple of days later, he calls me and goes, but you did get this movie of the week, Chuck Norris. You're going to be playing an Afghan terrorist. This is just before September 11th. Okay. The filming is like early 2000, probably 2001.
Oh, no.
You're going to be playing an Afghan terrorist who is trying to blow up some building in Chicago. You are the mastermind. I'm the guy who's like the scientist putting the bombs together. And there was a Osama bin Laden type character in it as well.
Oh no.
You're gonna go down to Dallas to film it. You're gonna be gone for a week and it pays like $5,000 or whatever it was. Okay. And at the time I was like, well, I need to take whatever I can. I gotta build my resume. I was new to the whole thing. Now, part of me thought, what I'm going to do is I'm going to use my acting to show why this guy's doing what he's doing.
Yeah.
Because as an actor, you know, they say write the actor's biography, write your character's biography. Yeah, yeah. How did your character end up here?
Where did they come from?
Where did they come from?
Yeah.
So I put a whole backstory. I was like, this guy was in Afghanistan when the Russians attacked Afghanistan. And for some reason, he's upset at the Americans. It doesn't even make sense because Russians had attacked. This was before September 11th. I was like, he was there at the Afghan-Russia war, but he's upset at America for some reason.
For not helping or whatever.
Whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I go, I'm going to show through that. So now just to show you, and by the way, when I read the script, so Chuck Norris plays this professor because at the time he was getting older. Uh-huh. So he had this younger guy who was going to do all the karate kicking and then he would do like some karate kicking, but the younger guy was the main guy.
Okay.
And Chuck Norris played a professor at a university. And there was actually a moment in that script where Chuck Norris is teaching like whatever, the class on Middle East studies. And he goes, Afghan, Muslims. And some kid like raises his hand. He's like, why don't we just bomb all of them or something? And then Chuck Norris' character goes, now, Michael, they're not all bad. So in my mind,
this
I go.
This is in the show?
This was in the friggin' movie.
Or in the movie?
Yeah,
sorry.
So I'm sitting there going, oh, well, they're trying to say something positive about, this is how I'm justifying it all for myself. So then I go, okay, you know what? Maybe they'll be into me saying to them, hey guys, by the way, I think my character should play it like this. Because I think we should show that this guy struggled.
And the director's like, yeah, that's great, Maz. Just put these bombs around your body.
Girl, pretty much. So what happened was I show up in Dallas where they were filming it. I go in for my wardrobe fitting and they go, here's your shirt, here's your pants, and here's your turban.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, and I go.
So stereotypical.
Girl, I sit there and I go. The wardrobe lady was super nice. So like I felt confident that I could talk. I go, I'm sorry, Jennifer or whatever her name is. Why am I wearing a turban? Well, the producers thought your character would wear a turban. I go, listen, I've done my research on Muslims in America. Most Muslims in America don't wear a turban. I go, the people wearing turbans in America are Indian Sikhs.
Right.
And I go, furthermore, if I'm a guy who's trying to blow up a building in Chicago, I'm not going to be walking around with a turban.
Yeah, it's so obvious.
I'm going to walk around with a Yankees hat on.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Or a Dallas Cowboy. You know what I'm saying? Or a Chicago Bears uniform.
Right.
Or whatever, shirt. So I go, listen.
Like, yeah, that's great, Maz. Put the turban on.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. So the poor girl, she's like, oh, okay. I go, listen. I go, do me a favor. I go, would you just talk to the producers? They'll understand. Let them know the actor's done his research. Let them know the actor comes from a Muslim country. I know my background. By the way, a lot of like people that are like religious in America, unless if the guy is an actual like imam at a mosque, you know, then he might wear the cap, but they're not walking around with that.
Right.
And also a lot of them were like, depending on which, because there's Sunnis, there's Shiites, there's all kinds of, it's like Protestant Catholic kind of thing, right?
Right.
There's some who will like button the button up to here and they'll have like a beard going kind of a thing.
Mm-hmm.
I go, maybe like if I button my shirt up, I get a little beard going, but you don't need the turban.
Right.
Let them know. I've done my research.
Dead.
Gotcha. So the next day I go into my trailer, there's my shirt, there's my pants, there's what looks like a scarf. And I go, oh, I'll wear a scarf. She goes, no, that's not the scarf. That's a turban. You just got to wrap it back up. I go,
jeez.
I go, why? I go,
they didn't even care what you had to say.
I go, you didn't talk to them? She goes, I talked to them. I go, well, what happened? She goes, they want you to wear the turban. I go, oh, God. I'm thinking to myself, oh, Jesus. And I go, okay, you know what? I go, all right, you know, it's a negotiation. Fine, I'll put it on. Put on the turban, feel like an idiot. I'm sitting there. And so the movie was Chuck Norris was the executive producer. His brother, Aaron Norris, was another exec producer. His son, Eric Norris, was the director.
Oh my God.
Eric is younger.
Yeah.
Now we're there, we're blocking our scenes. I got my turban on. I'm talking to Eric like an actor to a director. I go, Eric, by the way, can I talk to you for a second? Yeah. I don't think my character would wear a turban. And he's like, yeah, you know what? I didn't want you to wear one either, but my uncle, who's the producer, he wanted the turban. So then it hit me. I go, in their minds, the audience watching a Chuck Norris movie needs the indication. Just
you're the bad guy. People
visually.
With turbans are the, yeah.
That's it. So anyway.
So horrible.
I wear the stupid thing and I'm like, oh God. And then it was funny because I've done this on stage as a stand-up bit, but it's true. Like in the script, there was a little thing where it was written that like the Chuck Norris character is supposed to get in a fist fight or some sort with me, beat me up and then kill me basically. And like the day came to do it. And I think that timing was such that they were like, you know what? Why don't we just, we don't need to fight. I'm just going to shoot you. And I'm like, okay. And then they go, and now, by the way, it's a Chuck Norris movie. So there's a lot of stunts. So mm-hmm. there's all these stuntmen. Now, you know, stuntmen and stunt women, they're badass.
Yeah.
They do crazy shit.
Yeah.
They fall out of trees and land on their back.
Yeah.
So there's been a dude the whole time that looks like me. He's like shaved this. They've made him look like me for my stunts.
Uh-huh.
We're ready to go. So we're getting ready to go for the scene where Chuck Norris is going to shoot me. And all I got to do is fall back and die.
Right.
So they go, all right, bring the stunt guy in. He's going to fall back and die.
Uh-huh.
I was like, great. And then they come over. They go, hey, listen, man, he can do it. But if you're willing to do it, we think you can do it. And I'm like, oh, so now all these macho stunt dudes. I was like, yeah, I could, of course.
Fall backwards? Hell yeah.
I can fall backwards.
Done it 1,000 times.
Yeah, and they go, yeah, they go, listen, this is what you got to do. Now, listen, they go, when you get shot, now, a couple of these dudes were like Israeli Mossad. They're all like Navy SEAL type shit. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Guys, like, listen, when you get shot, a lot of actors, when they get shot, they don't realize, like, they before they go back, they go forward and then they go back.
Yeah.
He goes, you just need to go back.
Yeah.
He goes, as soon as you get hit, just go back.
Yeah.
Got it. They go, by the way, we're going to put a cushion behind you so you can fall back.
Yeah.
Okay. And just make sure when you go back, you know, just land like on your elbow. Okay, great. Get ready for the thing. And then they go, the cushion's in the shot. All right, get rid of the cushion. What? Yeah, get rid of the cushion. What? Now I'm supposed to just fall? Yeah, just don't. Listen, it's going to be fine. You can do it.
On the ground?
Yeah, so when you get hit, just remember, go back. Oh, by the way, when you go back, don't forget, now that there's no cushion, you got to tuck your head in as you fall back. So go back, but tuck your head in, because if you don't, you can hit your head and get a concussion. I'm like, okay, where's that other stunt dude? We're running out of time. Let's keep it going. Okay. Oh, by the way, you're going to come running at Chuck with a machine gun. And the machine gun is obviously, it's a fake, but it's heavy because to make it look real. So when you go down, remember now, you're going to go back, you tuck your chin, and don't let your hand, make sure your hand, if your hand hits like this, this is a heavy machine gun, it could crack your bones here. So you want to make sure that it lands, it hits the butt. So you're gonna go hit back, head down, and butt. Remember that.
Just looks so contrived.
I mean, Brittany, I'm going like, why the stunt dude's right there?
And you
watching
know you're
me.
Gonna have to do it more than once.
Of course.
How many times did you end up doing it?
Like 3-4 times. I'm doing it, right? And they're like, oh, that was good. That was good. Do it again. And I'm just like, oh fuck. And they got like padding in my lower back so you don't end up cracking your back. I'm like, oh,
did it hurt?
Dude, of course. I mean, but I was like, hey, I did it. It's one of those things where like you do it and you walk away. You're like, that wasn't that bad.
You'd be a fucking stunt man.
Yeah. And the next day you're like, oh, I can't get out of bed.
No.
What the fuck did I do yesterday? Yeah, it's one of those things, right? Here's the thing of it. Long story long. Movie is being edited. September 11th happens.
No.
September 11th happens. And now I'm going, shit.
Yeah.
I'm watching the news. There's like rednecks going around shooting Indian Sikhs just for having a turban.
Mm-hmm.
So in my mind, I go, fuck, if that's the case, I go, if this movie comes out on CBS and some numbnut is watching it.
And sees you.
Sees me.
Yeah.
And then sees me on the streets and doesn't realize, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. They're like, you're that guy.
You're that guy.
You're a terrorist.
Yeah. And not just me.
You're like, I'm Italian.
Yeah. Hey, ciao, bella. No, I was like, it could be, but not just me. Everyone else who's playing the Muslim.
I go,
you know what? I go, guys, I hope they don't air this.
Yeah.
And what happened was I write a letter to Les Moonves at CBS. Uh-huh. I'm a nobody. I'm still an assistant in an ad agency.
Right.
Write a letter to Les Moonves at CBS and to Chuck Norris's production company. You know, dear sirs, blah, blah, blah. This movie was made. I hope we can wait for the temperature to come down before we run it. Like the next day or two, whatever, a few days later, like in the trades, there's a quote from Chuck Norris going, we need to have this movie come out ASAP because it's in this movie that the terrorists get what they deserve. All that shit.
Oh my God.
Like, oh my God. Now I'm like bracing for like people coming after me. Dude, I tried watching this movie.
It was so bad.
It was so bad.
That no one even watched it.
I was sitting there going, the only reason I'm watching this is just to see what they do with me.
Yeah.
But I go, I have so like, and I'm trying to be objective.
Yeah.
I go, I so do not care for the protagonist in this movie because the acting is horrible.
Yeah.
The development of the story. I go, this is the worst movie ever. And then my scene comes up where I'm supposed to get killed and I did all the stunts for. Man, you couldn't even blink. Like, if you blinked, you missed. Like, they edited in a way where it's like, I was like, they didn't mean to fucking fall.
Yeah. So they just cut to you on the ground. They didn't even show you falling.
Motherfuckers.
So fuck. Well, good then. Because that way you didn't get shit for it. But what a fucking beating.
What a beating.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Go all the way to fucking Texas. Ugh. Do all the hair and makeup. Isn't that kind of funny? People don't realize about show business. It's like, I mean, you go to another state sometimes to shoot a movie. You do all the hair and makeup. You're on set for fucking 10 to 14 hours. And then sometimes when you see the movie, they cut so much.
Oh, yeah.
That, like, it's just so, it's crazy how much effort goes into it and then what ends up even being in it.
It's the biggest heartbreak when you see it like that. That movie in particular, though, I was happy that
you're
they.
Thank God.
I was happy it went under the radar.
Yeah.
But you're right. A lot of times when the effort that people don't know, they just think, you get together, you make your thing, right? Mm. But yeah, but and then also you learn, like, that helped me learn to say no.
Yeah.
Because I did. I came back and I said, no more terrorist parts. And then there was one other, like, that's when the TV show 24, because it was
that was a great show.
Great show.
Kiefer Sutherland.
Yeah.
I loved that show.
And they reached out. They go, listen, we got a part. The guy's a terrorist. And I was like, no. And they go, but halfway through the mission, he changes his mind.
Oh, good.
I go, he's an ambivalent terrorist. That's some progress.
Yeah.
So that's the last time I played a terrorist.
Did you do it?
I did that.
On 24?
Yeah.
It's a great fucking show.
It was a great show.
If anyone who's listening to this, like, revisit 24 with Kiefer Sutherland, that show was like a show that you can't put down.
And
that's like a binge show.
Yeah, back then, the way it would happen is you couldn't watch it all at once.
No.
You had to wait for Monday at 9 or whatever it was. I remember my wife and I would order Thai food and just watch that.
So fun. And then the whole premise of the show is that it takes place in 24 hours. So the show is called 24.
Yeah.
But then it's like all these episodes that take place over 24 hours. It's fucking awesome.
It is fucking
awesome. That was a freaking rad show.
But he never goes to the bathroom.
Oh my God. Someone else said that when I was watching. They're like, dude, they don't show this guy shitting
or pissing. Just once.
Or anything.
Just for one time. Like when he's on the phone with Chloe. Chloe, by the way, is a very funny comedian. You know Marilyn
Lake?
Yeah,
Rice Cub. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So
she's great.
She's great. And
she was great in that.
He should be on the toilet once on the phone with her. And she should be like, Jack, you need to go. He's like, Chloe,
I'm taking a giant shit.
I got a little.
It's been 24 hours.
I'm a little clogged up. I mean, this just, I'm a little stressed out, Chloe.
So many people said that about that show. I mean, Kiefer Sutherland was great in that. That was a great show. That's so cool that you got to be in that.
Yeah, it was cool. I had no scenes with him, but it was fun. That was a quality show, and they were really good with what they did.
What other big shows have you done that I don't even know about, which I should know?
I've been like, first of all, when I first started out, my acting was paying for my comedy.
That's great.
Yeah, because as a comedian, like when you first do the Comedy Store in the Laugh Factory, they pay you like $15 a set. You can't make a living.
They're like, you can pay us $5 to perform.
I used to. When I first did open mics, there was a place on Highland Avenue. It was a coffee shop. I think it was called Highland Grounds. You paid them $3. They give you a coffee and 3 minutes on stage. Yeah, I paid money, but you pay money all the time. So then eventually, though, my comedy touring was able to pay for my acting.
Great.
So if you look at my IMDb, you'll see I was on Grey's Anatomy, NYPD Blue, Curb Your Enthusiasm, Shameless. I've done all those.
So successful.
It's been fun. I mean, listen, the most important thing that I always tell people, I go, if you find something you love, then just get into it.
Yeah.
Because somebody asked me, they go, when do you
consider? Unless it's meth.
Meth? Well, if you love it. If you love it, go for it.
Get into it.
But make it
a business.
Like, be the
Breaking Bad. Be the Breaking Bad.
Be the best at it. That's what I'm trying to say. You know, you don't want to be like second place meth guy. You want to be the best. Like, no teeth. Oh, man.
I'm dying. Okay, so what do you like better, acting or comedy, or both the same?
I love both. But I mean, obviously, stand-up is like, I'm probably best at stand-up just because I do it so much.
Yeah, you love it.
And I get to talk about what's on my mind.
Yeah.
So it's interesting when you look around and you go, oh, wow, my peers are like, I feel like I'm on the level with my peers.
Yeah.
So that if I'm on a show with some heavy hitters, you go, oh, what am I doing here? You go, oh, wait, I'm here because I deserve
it. You're part
to
of it.
Yeah. And as an actor, I would just love, I mean, I am dying right now. Put this in the universe.
We're putting it out there.
I want to have my own show.
Yeah.
Where I can be closer to my voice.
Great.
You know what I'm saying?
Let's
put it out there.
I mean, you have your podcast, which everyone can go listen to, which is Back to School with Maz Jobani, which you guys should all go check out. And then your special Pandemic Warrior on Peacock TV. Do you just download that? What is that?
Peacock. Yeah, Peacock
TV.
Is
the new NBC.
It's the new NBC right. app. They have The Office. They have all kinds
cool.
of stuff.
Okay,
so I think it's free to download, and right. then if you want to like upgrade or whatever, right. you can do it. But yeah, it's there. They got a lot of comedy specials on there. People
Love
should check it.
It
out.
Okay, so guys, make sure to check that out. Make sure to check out Maz's podcast too. And yeah, we're gonna put that in the universe for you that you get your own show.
Let's do it.
I feel like you can. I feel like everyone is getting stuff right now.
I feel
like it's happening.
I've been waiting for this call from whoever it is that's handing those
yes.
out.
Yes. It seems like everyone's getting that.
Right?
I mean, I'm not going to lie.
Hello?
Not white people, but everyone else. Everybody like, 'cause they're sick of people. All the white people. Us white people have had our day. I mean, I'm not technically white, but they've had their day. You
Hilarious.
Know what I mean? Like, it's not other people's turn.
No, there's a lot of quality shows. I mean, what's interesting is there's a lot more platforms now.
Right.
But also the competition is a lot. Like, there's been times where I've been like, oh, I got to... You know, what a great team I put together. I put like writers and producers,
yeah.
and we've taken our show out, and then they'll be like, oh, you know, Martin Scorsese and DiCaprio and Kevin Hart and Will Smith and all those guys just walked in with another guy 5 minutes ago, and they just pitched. I'm not saying those are the guys, but I'm
right.
saying that there are, it's of that
they
world
They pitch the same thing.
Pitch the same
but
thing,
I mean,
and
like
they were here before you.
You know, I feel like you could do it still. There's so many people that like, you know, the Trevor Noah's type situation.
Yes.
You
yeah.
could do that in yeah. your version.
Well, I am. You know, that's part of what the podcast is to
yeah.
do that. And I think I've always been a big proponent of make your own opportunities.
You have to today.
And we do. And
nobody
I do,
wants
and
to give you
You
anything.
Do, you
yeah.
know. It's like, who you know, this... You don't have anybody offset going, let's do that again, but this time just smile more. No, you just do your thing.
That's all I've ever done, actually. Yeah. I've had not one thing handed to me. Like,
Beautiful.
I've created all my own stuff when I started on Vine. I did all my own filming, all my own editing, blah, blah,
yeah.
and then just from there, created all my own things from then and then on. Like, I've never had someone come to me and go, hey, we want to produce something for you.
Yeah.
I'm like...
I'm
no,
very much
it's like you have to do everything.
That, listen, I would say a large percentage of people fall into that. And a lot of people
yeah.
don't know that.
Yeah.
To the point where like I even, you know, Edward James Olmos, he was Edward James Olmos. Mm-hmm. He's a famous actor.
Yeah.
I think he won an Academy Award. He was what was it? Stand and Deliver. That was a movie that's amazing, but he's done a lot. Years ago I was developing a show with him where he was gonna play my long lost father. My long father ends up being a Mexican dude and I'm a Persian dude.
Dad.
It was actually really a funny idea. But I was asking him, I go, hey, like who's helped you get the stuff most? Like your agents, your managers? He goes, I'll be honest with you. He goes, most of the stuff I've gotten, I started with me. And that's the truth for everybody.
Every big thing that I've gotten, it's because I'm friends with someone who goes, oh, we thought Brittany would be good for this, or you know,
yeah.
it's just friends,
yeah,
people that you meet. Like
yeah.
honestly, like it's so funny. People don't realize like you really have to make your own way.
Absolutely,
yeah. So
and that's true, and that's not to poo-poo managers, agents, or anything. Because
no.
there's obviously you hope to get a team that's hustling for you,
right? But it's a different time now.
But also means don't sit back every
yeah.
day and just stare at the telephone and be like, why
yeah.
isn't it ringing?
Right, exactly.
You know?
It's true.
Make
it is
your
true.
Own opportunities.
Make your own opportunities. That's how we're gonna wrap up this podcast. So we're putting that out in the universe for you.
That'll be
it's
the name of
happen.
Our. That'll
Good.
Be the name of our clubhouse.
Make your own opportunities.
Make your own opportunities.
No one gives you anything in this life, okay? But problems, okay? They give you problems. I loved having you here, guys. Make
it.
Sure to follow Maz on Instagram. You're just at Maz Jobrani on Instagram.
Across the board, Twitter, Clubhouse,
everything. Follow him on Clubhouse, man. We've pitch the shit out of Clubhouse. And I think
YouTube,
you might
I'm
get
on YouTube,
some new
Maz
YouTube.
Jobrani.
No one cares about anymore. Dead.
Oh,
I'm just kidding. No, they do. And just make sure to subscribe to his podcast. It sounds like you might learn something. Back to school. As one who didn't really love school myself, I might be having to listen to that so I can get some, you know, learn. So
we
I can
make
learn
it fun.
Some things.
We make learning
conversation.
Fun.
I love that.
Yeah.
And then make sure to also check out his special Pandemic Warrior on Peacock TV. I've loved having you here.
I really enjoyed talking
Yay!
To you.
Yay! I love it. And thank you guys all so much for listening. I appreciate every single one of you. Leave comments who you want to see on upcoming episodes or any questions that you might have for Maz. I can pass them along as long as they're appropriate. And
yes. Yes.
And we'll see you guys next week on another episode of Horse.